126.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
Chris Rutkowski joining us with Gene and Chris. We're talking about abductions. Now, since you wrote the book, which is, 12 years ago, have you done much further research into abductions?
Not a lot. Well, for about 3 or 4 years following the book, of course, it generated interest from people talking with me about it, their own experiences. And I would say that even now, I get maybe one or two cases presenting themselves to me every year. But the numbers are certainly dwindling as far as I can see.
Of the various abduction cases that you investigated before the book was published till now, can you maybe summarize another case or so that seemed compelling to you, something you can't figure out?
Well, one of the most interesting cases happened a number of years ago when a nurse had approached me. She had said, you know, I work, you know, a lot of hours. I'm working late night and shift work, and I really don't have time for watching science fiction films and things on TV, and I don't have time to read science fiction books. But I had something very strange happen to me, and I can't explain it. So I went to visit her and talked with her at length, and her story was this, that she had been working a late shift, had come home about 3 or 4 in the morning, was very, very tired by her own admission, but at the same time she had that kind of buzz that you get from having been up for 12 or 14 or how many hours. So she wasn't at any time ready to go to sleep. But she had entered her apartment and had gone through the living room into her bedroom area and was preparing for to get ready for bed. She was still fully dressed when she heard a thump and a bang from out in the living room. Now, she lived in an apartment block where there were some old college students and some young people, and it was a lower-rent neighborhood. So, you know, there were people who caused trouble in hallways at 3 or 4 in the morning sometimes.
Yeah, I used to do that when I was a kid. I used to cause all sorts of trouble with my friends. Yeah. Not at 3 or 4 in the morning, but always in a tenement in Brooklyn, on the top floor, the people underneath would say, "What's all that jumping and thumping all about?"
Exactly. Yeah, you sound exactly like that type.
So I resemble that remark.
So she was a little annoyed at this, and she figured, you know, she really wants to get some sleep this night, so she's going to go out and give him a piece of her mind. So she stormed out of her bedroom with the intention of opening the door from the living room into the hallway and yelling at whoever was doing that, except when she got into the living room, there were two creatures, two little beings about 4 feet high, again deviating from the standard grays. These creatures had round heads. They were all white. They had very round, bulbous eyes, slits for mouths, and they seemed to be wearing long white togas or long white gowns. And her first reaction was, oh no, it's Halloween already and they got into my apartment. So she immediately said to these two creatures who were standing just a matter of 6 or 8 feet away from her, how did you get into my apartment? I don't have any candy for you. What are you doing here? And these two creatures looked at her, and then they looked at one another, and then they looked back at her, and as soon as they did that, she realized these are not kids looking for Halloween treats. She said that she asked them who they are. She was taken aback. She had no idea what was going on. And somehow, telepathically, they said that we're here to visit you, to talk with you, and we would like to know if you would like to come with us for a ride. You know, hey, you know, you want to come for a ride. What a great pickup line. But here's these creatures in her own living room asking her this. And she just sort of said, well, I guess so. And the next thing she knows, she's not in her apartment at all. She's walking through a very large hangar area with one creature in front of her and one creature behind her. and she's being led across this hangar area where she could see a number of classic, you know, the saucer-shaped and cigar-shaped objects. And she was led into a door that was in the side of a large cigar-shaped object. She was led in there, led down a gangway of some sort into a control room in the front of this craft, and was indicated that she should sit between these two creatures who had sort of a Star Trek-y console with a view screen. And she saw a picture of the Earth appear on the screen in front of her, getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And then the next thing she remembers is that she's back in her bedroom on the side of the bed away from the door to the living room. The bed is still made up, not slept in. She's still in her clothes. Her shoes are still on. And 2 to 3 hours have passed from the time that she had gone home, and she had no recollection of what might have transpired during that time. Now, she said to me, you know, I don't have vivid dreams. I'm sure I was awake. I'm sure this really happened, but what was this? And you helped me. And, you know, she had no reason to make this up. She had no reason to fabricate anything. She had no gain, everything to lose, and I had no explanation for what might have occurred.
What can we say?
It's just one of those classic cases that we simply...
And Chris, you never mentioned where she was located, I don't think?
Well, this was here in Canada.
Whereabouts, though?
In the city of Winnipeg.
Hmm. I don't know what to make of that, boy. great witness has no, like you said, there's no apparent reason why she would come forward with a fabricated story like that. It sounds actually very believable. Now, I was interested, Chris, in you're saying that you seem to be seeing a reduction of your of UFO-style abduction cases. Do you think this is because your book now is 10 years old and it's run its course, or do you think that we're actually witnessing a reduction, possibly, in claims of UFO abductions? I kind of sense that for the last couple of years.
Right. I do tend to think that we don't see or hear as many abduction stories as we used to. I will often get, I continually get UFO reports, but very, very few abduction cases are coming to me, certainly not as many as we used to get. So from my perspective...
Chris, speaking of getting UFO reports, I want to make sure everybody out there in the Paracast listening audience knows about the Canadian UFO Survey. That you've been involved with for quite some time. And your first article that you released on your blog here in the, you know, Y2012K, it talks about classifying and studying UFO cases. Now, I'm not sure if you're aware of the work of Ray Stanford, but recently we had Ray on. I consider Ray probably, in my estimation, the preeminent observer of UFOs, especially analyzing photographs and films. And he brought up some very interesting points of kind of rules of thumb for people to, you know, be aware of when they're out in the field observing the sky. And your article goes through and gives seven categories of sightings that make sense to me about how a vast majority of UFO reports are actually misidentified mundane phenomena. And that's an area that I'd like to talk with you here and try to give our listening audience a good sort of set of rules of thumb of you know, what to look for when you're actually sky watching. You're an astronomer. You're in a really good position to help some folks out there.
Absolutely.
Yep. Well, I think maybe what we should do here is do an overview of these categories over the next few segments, just to give people kind of a background, because we talk so much about sightings and a lot of arcane things here, but it's a good idea for people to realize, once again, that even if ET is there, what, 80-90% of the things they see in the sky are just completely conventional? They're not UFOs, they're not spaceships, they're not interdimensional beings.
Probably a higher percentage than that even, Gene.
Perhaps, you know, it's hard to say. Chris Rutkowski is joining us. With Gene and Chris, you're in
Paracast.
So here's what happened. I was placing an order online. The site went down. It just stopped responding. It took hours before it returned, but I'd already placed the order with another company. If your site goes down, you could lose business. And if you have a business or personal site, you'll want to know it's easy to run and it will stay online. At iWeb, your site is hosted on one of the most reliable networks in the world. Check it out. iWeb.com. That's iWeb.com.
You expect professional service from your doctor, your accountant, and even the girl who takes your morning coffee order. Why not from your domain registrar, too? Namecheap.com provides stellar service with no sneaky upselling. We offer more features and security options for your website than there are ways to order a latte. And new domains come with WhoisGuard to protect your personal info. At Namecheap.com, you can get your domain for as low as $2.99. Now is a great time to get to know Namecheap.com.
Hi, Jason Lewis here. Anybody who's been listening to my program knows how shaky the U.S. economy is right now. Will we have a V-shaped recovery, or will it be a W-shaped one where the nation slips back into recession? Of course, if you think that Washington can spend or inflate its way out of a downturn, you've got nothing to worry about. But as you know, I have my doubts. So let me tell you about gold. Now, as my friend Ted Anderson from Midas Resources likes to say, gold, like all commodity markets, fluctuates in price and you could lose money, but it has never been worth zero. Give it some thought, and if you're interested in converting your IRA to gold or would like to actually have it in your possession, call Midas Resources today at 1-800-686-2237. The U.S. dollar was once backed by gold, but has since lost 90% of its value. And if things don't change, I'm afraid the trend will continue. Call Midas Resources today at 1-800-686-2237 for gold and tell them Jason Lewis sent you.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Iodine protection packs from hempusa.org are now in stock for immediate delivery worldwide. Our iodine protection packs include micro plant powder, green life kelp, red palm oil, and our clear roll-on iodine that will feed the body the iodine it needs. All iodine protection packs are in stock. Save you money and ship for free in all 50 states. Visit hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608 today.
HempUSA.org has a revolutionary wonder food for detoxing the body and rebuilding the immune system.
Microplant powder can help unclog arteries and soften heart valves while removing heavy metals, virus, fungus, bacteria, and parasites. Plus, it cleans and purifies the blood, lungs, stomach, and colon. Keep your body clean with microplant powder. Visit us at HempUSA.org or call 908-691-2608 today.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And if you'd like to catch up on past episodes, we have hundreds of shows for you to download direct from theparacast.com. That's theparacast.com. Or check us out at iTunes.
Chris Rutkowski, astronomer, science writer from Canada, talking about his investigation into UFOs with Gene and Chris. When we broke, we asked you, at least Chris O'Brien did, about this article on classifying and studying UFO cases. seven categories. Could you maybe cover them briefly?
Well, absolutely. You know, there's many explanations for UFOs. You know, there's just a plethora of things that things could be. Hynek and a number of other individuals came up with classification schemes, but you know, there are some basics around there. And if we just look at the basics, we can come up with some explanations for a good chunk of what's being reported. Certainly some cases are simple fireballs or bolides, and these are chunks of comets that are impacting the atmosphere. And these are easy to pick out of the data set of UFO reports because they tend to be blue or green. The sightings tend to be very short-lived, of the order of 2, 3, 4, 5, sometimes as long as 10 seconds, depending on whether we're in the middle of a meteor storm or not. They're very easy to pick out. They sometimes are described as long teardrops with long tails. And other characteristics are things like, well, it looked like a plane was going to be crashing just beyond the next hill. It was coming straight down or at an angle, and we could see chunks flying off of it. We're absolutely certain that what we're seeing was a plane crashing. And these are all descriptors of fireballs or bolides, as astronomers like to call them, and they do account for a certain percentage of the body of UFO reports that we get every year. Now, people report seeing starlight objects, starlight lights hanging in the sky for hours and hours and hours, and sometimes they're flashing different colors. These are usually stars or planets. And the fact that they are seen for many, many minutes and of the order of 2 or 3 hours, sometimes people will say we've been watching them from midnight right until the sunrise. Again, those are easy to pick out of the body of UFO reports. Now, the trouble is that some of the starlight objects that are reported are moving, and they're not stationary. And some of these are certainly satellites. You can go log on to websites like Heavens Above, and you can actually plot it for your own area, exactly down to your latitude and longitude, and you can calculate how many times a night that something's going to pass overhead, and you can actually check and see that something's going to be passing overhead at precisely 11:52 p.m. Over your town or city. You can walk out, and you can see it.
Hey, there's also, Chris, FlightAware. There's an iPhone app now. You can point your iPhone at any place in the sky, and it'll instantly give you a readout of all transponded mundane accredited air traffic.
Yeah, there's a number of great resources that you can use. So there are ways of figuring out exactly what's going on up there. So some are satellites. Sometimes though, we get these reports where there's 5 to 10 objects moving together in clusters. Those are a little trickier, and I have to tell you, I'm baffled by some of those, especially where they're all flying together in the same direction and then zoom take off in 5 or 6 different directions. Those are very, very curious, and I think we have to deal with those separately. But the simple ones moving by themselves, or as many as 3 moving together, are often satellites. There's a category of satellites called NOSS, N-O-S-S, which are basically used for triangulation, where various governments will send these up, and because they have 3 different vantage points, they can pinpoint exactly the movement of objects on the ground. So they are, when you see triangular or formation of star-like objects in the sky, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's a triangular object. It means, in some cases, that it's a triangular formation of satellites high in the sky that are being used for military purposes. Now, beyond those, there are everything from northern lights to standard aircraft that are passing overhead, helicopters. We've had cases of casinos and other areas that have spotlights flying or shining on the underside of clouds, and they tend to whiz around one another and then zip away again. We've had everything you can possibly imagine has been identified or misidentified as a UFO, and these categories are very interesting to go through. And yet, with all these cases that we have that have, you know, various explanations, we tend to be left with small percentage, and you mentioned 10%, depending on how many passes you go through and how rigorously the data is collected, it's somewhere between 1 to 3 or 4 or 5% that we're left with in terms of what we'd call high-quality unknowns every year. And these high-quality unknowns are cases where we have ruled out satellites and stars and planets and balloons and spotlights and everything,
Chinese lanterns.
And Chinese lantern. Well, we've had a lot of those last year, that's for sure. But we've ruled out a lot of things, and the witnesses were cooperative, and they seemed to be very coherent, and perhaps there were more than one witness.
And video helps, too.
Video helps. So we have all these cases, and yet we have no explanation. Now, that doesn't mean that these cases are automatically spacecraft, but it does mean that there's a real phenomenon there that somebody witnessed that we can't explain. Now, you know, 1 to 2 or 3% doesn't sound like a lot, but when you look at the raw numbers, for example, in Canada, we're hovering around 1,000 cases for 2011 again. You know, where you're looking at a significant number of reports. And when you look over 20 years, 30 years, and in Canada, we're approaching 25 years of the Canadian UFO survey, you're talking about dozens and dozens and into the hundreds of cases that can't be explained, that have resisted explanations all these years, that suggest that something real is being observed and the phenomenon simply can't be dismissed very easily.
We will talk about Shag Harbor, which I think is one of our finest cases and one that you cut your teeth on.
Yes, indeed. It's one of the classics during that big wave of 1967 when everything and everything seem to be happening in Canada.
Before we get to that, the one thing I always talk about in terms of UFOs is the publicity flap, which is that you get a UFO report in the newspaper or people in the neighborhood start talking about it. They start looking upward. And as soon as they look upward, of course, they see more things, and then you get more cases. Now, maybe it is that UFOs are always there and we just have to be looking in the right place at the right time. But if there is that publicity, you will get more cases. So you said 1,000 cases or whatever in 2011. Also, MUFON reported a lot of cases.
Right. So a lot of our data comes from MUFON, and it comes from a lot of different sources. We didn't see the big spike that MUFON reported, and I think that's largely because of the way they've been doing their collecting these days, because they didn't have their database wasn't as rigorous and put together in the past couple of years. But we do see in Canada a consistently high level of UFO reports that's going on regardless of whether there's media publicity or not. In fact, what happens, and never talking with Alan Hynek about this when he was still alive, that it's not necessarily that media attention and movies and TV will give rise to UFO reports that are occurring. They'll often make people more confident and reassure them that it's all right to talk about experiences they've had in the past.
I'll tell you, ladies and gentlemen, it'll be all right to talk about this. We have Chris Rutkowski with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Ray Perkins, a reclusive veteran burned out from the Gulf War, lives tortured by relentless, perplexing nightmares. Nightmares of a horrific battle in deep space and of a mysterious woman suffering in agony for her devastated world. A woman not yet born, calling across centuries to him. Then, a coincidence leads him to his destiny, his chance to alter the universe. Attack! Attack! Of the Rockaways. The former fiction editor for Star Wars and Indiana Jones, Robert Simpson, writes, "The soul of the novel Attack of the Rockaways lies in its heart and passion for building a convincing tale of a love that spans a galaxy. A thrilling story. Attack of the Rockaways is available now. Read a sample chapter and get a special discount off of the cover price at our website, rockoids.com. That's rockoids.com. Attack. Of the Rockaways, a novel in the grand science fiction tradition.
Folks, have you lost your power and wanted to simply flip a switch to get the lights back on? If so, this is going to be the most important message you'll ever hear, because there's never been a better time to get ready for the winter power outages ahead. Here's why. Solar power generators are now available from our friends at Solutions from Science, one of our oldest sponsors. Their emergency backup systems provide life-saving electrical power when you need it most. Unlike gas generators, a solar generator runs quietly, emits no fumes, and produces electricity from the sun. It's like having an electric power plant running quietly in your own home. Whether it's ice storms, brownouts, or blackouts, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. When the power goes out this winter, you'll be ready with a solar power generator from Solutions from Science. Go to mysolarbackup.com for more information. That's mysolarbackup.com or call 877-327-0365.
That's what it sounds like when a burglar kicks in the door of a dark house that looks like no one is home. Don't let your home be the next target. Make it look like someone is home watching television with Fake TV. Fake TV is a small electronic device that makes the same light as a real television. So from outside, it looks like someone is home watching TV. Fake TV plugs in just like a lamp on a timer, but is far more convincing to burglars. Fake TV deters burglars, costs far less than an alarm, and is highly recommended by numerous police departments. Use it anytime you're away from home. To order your Fake TV for only $34.95, go to faketv.com. Or call 1-877-5-FAKE-TV. Each additional Fake TV is only $29.95. So get one for you and one for a loved one for safety, security, and peace of mind for both of you. Call 877-5-FAKE-TV or go to FakeTV.com. FakeTV.com, the burglar deterrent.
Hi folks, Jason Lewis here. Did you know USA Today reports that nearly 20% of parents plan to take a second job to pay bills and support their families? Well, bravo, I applaud responsibility. But I have a far better idea, a way for you to stay home and earn that second income to pay bills or get ahead financially. I recommend starting your own internet-based home business through incomeathome.com. They can help you start earning money fast. No selling soap, no cold calling, and no pressure. No matter your age, education, or experience, you can do this in the comfort of your home. They provide the coaching and they bring potential customers to your home computer. You can literally earn money from your kitchen table. And you know, I recommend incomeathome.com to all of my listeners. So visit incomeathome.com and check out the $1,000 giveaway. That's incomeathome.com. Don't forget to tell them Jason Lewis sent you. That's incomeathome.com, incomeathome.com, incomeathome.com.
Hello, this is John Burroughs, one of the witnesses to the Rendlesham UFO incident. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
With Chris Rutkowski, it is now comfortable. You can feel comforted in talking about UFO cases. But I see the point there that if you see a UFO sighting, or you see a movie about something related to space people, you feel comforted that maybe the experience you had was not so strange. Another point, too, which some people who are involved in the more paranormal aspects of the question say, is that there may be other things going on with people who see UFOs. Maybe they have poltergeist phenomena, stuff like that, other types of events. But the UFO is like the door opener. Once they feel comfortable with you talking about the UFO case, there are other things that will come forth. Are you seeing that in your research?
I have seen that, and I saw it very early in my research and investigations. In fact, back in the 1970s, I had gone on a number of digs. We don't hear the term used very much anymore, but it's more like an archaeological dig where you go to an area where there hasn't been any UFO reports, and you just begin talking with people about any odd experiences they might have had. And I'd gone to an area where there had been some UFO cases just on the periphery, but nothing in this particular one county. We don't call them counties here in Canada, but that would be the equivalent. I had dropped in at the gas station, and it dropped in at the country store and so forth. Somebody said, well, you should talk to this fellow named Phil just down the road. So I went to talk to Phil, and I said to him, have you seen any UFOs, anything strange flying in the sky? And Phil was very puzzled, and he was adamant, no, I ain't seen any of that sort of stuff because, you know, that's all nonsense. And if you don't mind, I'm very, very busy. I have to get back to what I'm doing. So I said, certainly, absolutely. At which time he pulled out his dowsing rods and started looking for a well. And I thought, well, you know, this is a bit odd. And I talked to him about that. And I said, well, you know, do you get these senses? Do you can sense things? Can you pick up the vibrations? He says, oh, yeah, the house down the road, you know, they've had hauntings and ghosts and all that sort of stuff going on for years now. But you didn't ask me about that. And, you know, the most extreme case, I remember this as well from, the, I think it was perhaps the early 80s, where a number of people had seen a UFO and that actually had created a landing site. There's some marks left in the ground. And we went and looked at them and took measurements and samples and so forth. The following morning, a Sasquatch Bigfoot was reported from about 100 feet away from that UFO landing site.
Now you're into Paracast country with that
exactly.
One.
Yeah, everybody just thought, oh, yeah, just one of those things. And nobody seemed to think it odd at all that the two phenomena might be linked, because it's just one of those things that happens to occur in this particular area of the country. So, yes, I have seen that overlap. In recent years, of course, when you start talking about orbs and photographs, for example, you kind of have to talk with one foot into the psychic realm and one foot in the alien realm, because people can't seem to decide whether orbs are one or the other, or perhaps both. So,
well, how about you, Chris? I mean, are we? You're a professional astronomer. Are we? And an educator. Are we experiencing visitations from a extraterrestrial civilization, or are we dealing with something that's maybe more complex? It's more a closed system. Maybe something that that, you know, our planet somehow is producing.
Well, you know, I actually studied this quite thoroughly because of the work of people like Michael Persinger and Paul Devereaux regarding Earthlight, tectonic strain luminosities, and so forth. In fact, I wrote one of my undergraduate theses was on the tectonic strain theory of UFOs, which was proposed by Michael Persinger, where he said that a very, very faint strain underneath the ground to a depth of several miles, in some cases tens of miles, can make its way to the surface through a series of events and leap.
Well, it's like a piezoelectric phenomenon.
Piezoelectric, triboluminescence. There's a number of mechanisms that he was suggesting, and the lights jump into the air and can be seen as UFOs. And he correlated this in a number of papers which were published in scientific journals, where he showed that minor earthquakes in a particular area could generate UFO reports, or were somehow related to UFO reports, many hundreds of miles away. I thought this was a bit odd, because he used in some cases the data that we were publishing for Canadian UFO reports, we know that, having just had the previous discussion before the break, that many of the cases can be explained. I thought it odd that you can use the raw data of UFOs that are actually explained as airplanes, satellites, and planets to show that there's a correlation between those sightings and earthquakes that show there's some real natural phenomenon going on. So I actually ended up studying the phenomenon in quite detail, and as I mentioned, I produced my own undergraduate thesis for one of my courses at university on this, and I quibble with it. Now, I quibble with the mechanism. I don't doubt that this can actually explain some UFO reports, but earthquake lights and tectonic strain lights are quite different. You mentioned piezoelectricity. That's certainly another aspect that we're talking about, and that's been used to try and explain lights in places like Marfa, Texas, and Brown Mountain, and places like that. I know Ted Phillips has been seriously looking at this, and some of the places in Missouri that he's been looking at, because the lights just seem to dance around and do their own thing. It's very possible that there is some earth energy that's doing this, and Paul Devereaux, of course, carried this to an extreme with the ley lines and dragon lines and so forth in England and other parts of Europe. I don't doubt that in some cases these energies from inside the Earth can give rise to UFO reports, although when you look at the data, many of the cases that you're using as data in trying to correlate this are reports where we know that there were aircraft or bolides or whatnot flying or being observed in the same area. So it's very, very difficult to correlate this one-on-one and assume some sort of causality. At the same time, we know there are UFO reports. We know there's possible energy creation. So, I'm open to the possibility. I just don't think that we can embrace it wholeheartedly at this time.
Let me ask you quickly just to kind of segue to something, because we'd like to get into the Shag Harbor case before we let you go. And that is, over the past few weeks, people have been reporting strange sounds, strange noises in the sky. What are they hearing?
Well, in its way, this could be one of the worst things that ever happened to ufology. Because
I don't know how things can't get worse. Some pretty bad
it couldn't
things
possibly
happened.
Get worse. Well, this is an indication that perhaps they are. That the sounds are being heard all around the world, and they're almost automatically assumed by a lot of people to have something to do with UFOs, or that the aliens have something to do with it. In fact, if you look at blogs and Facebook posts by people, the connection is automatically there.
It's kind of funny how that works.
Yeah. And yet, the recordings, some are on YouTube, some are just audio recordings that people have posted, they're different in a lot of ways, and they're recorded under different circumstances by different recording devices. Not all cell phones are perfect, and some people have audio recording on their cameras and video recorders, and some people are actually using microphones in the field. And so they're all recorded in different ways. So number one, I'd say there's no one explanation for all the odd noises that people are recording and playing for each other. It's simply
well, is a collective delusion like pitted windshields in Seattle and Vancouver? Are we actually seeing something?
Well, I don't think it's not necessarily a collective delusion. There have been some cases. I know there's a case in Windsor and Detroit fairly recently, where they managed to triangulate the sounds to a military base or a restricted area just south of Detroit somewhere.
Okay, well, before we get to the restricted area and other restrictions, we have this restriction. We have Chris Rutkowski with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Graphic Converter is the image manipulation tool for the rest of us. It does not use any database. You get full control of all your files. Want to view the images of a folder? Drag it into Graphic Converter, and a powerful browser opens up to show your image files. You could use it for slideshows. You could use it to import images from digital cameras or from scanners. Need to do some image editing? You can do that too in Graphic Converter. Also, print catalogs. Convert from so many formats, I can't even list them. Download now to see if Graphic Converter is good for you, like 1.5 million other users. Guess what? You could save money when you buy Graphic Converter. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL to get a special price for Graphic Converter. Go to LemkeSoft.com. That's LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com.
Emergency preparedness plans must include a fast way to start a fire. Fire up instantly with the revolutionary Quick Stove, a compact, lightweight, portable stove that's ready for cooking in less than 1 minute. Quick Stove, the safe, non-explosive fuel source that is an emergency preparedness essential. Quick Stove comes with 4 waterproof fuel cells that ignite in seconds, burn for up to 90 minutes each, can be lit and relit, and be stored indefinitely. At up to 18,000 BTUs, Quick Stove is ready to boil water in less than 5 minutes and burns hotter than most outdoor stoves. Now, the best part. Quick Stove starts at only $34.99 and comes with a 100% satisfaction or your money back guarantee. Order today at quickstove.com or call 801-784-0225. That's 801-784-0225. Or go to quickstove.com. Click on the discounts tab for multi-unit savings. Quick Stove, quite possibly the world's fastest outdoor fire.
Warning, the unprepared may not survive the next natural disaster, terrorist attack, pandemic, or economic collapse. In light of recent global unrest and natural disasters, we bring you this urgent message from David Morris, author of the acclaimed Urban Survival Course. Because this message is urgent, we won't waste time on the why you should act now. You already know why. It's the very real and growing dangers reported in the media every day. Now it's the what you must do. Go to freesurvivalminicourse.com and claim your free Urban Survival Minicourse that will prepare
prepare you right in your own home. Today, David Morris is offering you instant access to a 7-part urban survival mini course at freesurvivalminicourse.com. You should already be at your keyboard. Enough talk. Act now while you still have time and while it's still free. freesurvivalminicourse.com, freesurvivalminicourse.com, or call 800-366-5138, 800-366-5138. You'll be glad you did.
Digestive health is the key to wellness and elimination of toxins. That bears repeating. Digestive health is the key to wellness and elimination of toxins. And Pro-EM-1 Daily Probiotic Cleanse is the key to digestive health. Pro-EM-1 is a powerful liquid probiotic, strong enough to cleanse, gentle enough to use every day. Pro-EM-1 is dairy, wheat, and soy free, contains all natural and certified organic ingredients, contains no preservatives or animal products, supports a healthy digestive and immune system, supports weight loss, improves absorption of food nutrients, aids in controlling yeast infections, is never freeze-dried, and uses three groups of live, viable, beneficial microbes to cleanse and remove toxins. Order Pro-EM-1 Daily Probiotic Cleanse at Terraganics.com, spelled TerraganiX.com, Terraganics.com, or call toll-free 866-369-3678. That's 866-369-3678. Pro-EM-1, the raw probiotic.
This is Jim Mosley, editor of Saucer Smear, and I'm here to say a good word or two about the Paracast, which I believe is the gold standard of paranormal radio. Listen to it if you can.
This is the show with Chris and Chris, Rutkowski and O'Brien with Gene Steinberg.
Sometimes you're confusing me when you say, well, Chris said, and I'm like thinking.
That's right. I'm doing that deliberately. You see, my intention when we have a situation where we have a name conflict is to either maybe call our Chris Christopher or call
there
him
go.
Trickster person.
Oh, so don't go there. Everybody will dog you.
They
well,
already
you
did.
Know what happened? Gene, actually, now that you mention it, I have been in so many bands with another Chris. So I adopted my original christened name, which is K.K. Barnes, Kim Keegan Barnes. So we can just call me K.K.
Okay, it's a deal. I can also be called the old guy, too.
I don't think you can even get close to Gene.
No, the only person on the planet who's older than I am is Jim Mosley.
Oh. Stan Friedman doesn't hold a candle to that either, huh?
Well, let's just say he's somewhere in the middle.
Okay.
Okay. That's where it comes. Okay, so some of these sounds were traced to a military base in Detroit?
Just south of Detroit.
Just south of Detroit, okay.
And it seems that there's some activity there. I suspect that in other areas around the country, there's a few things like that. Because a lot of people live within, let's say, 10 miles of an interstate, within 10 miles of a shipping depot. There's a lot of things that could be causing rumbling sounds, and the rumbling sounds themselves are of different timbre, of different quality. I've listened to a whole bunch on YouTube recently, and they all seem to be different. Now, that may be a characteristic of the quality of YouTube, of the cameras, of the cell phones, but they all seem to be different. There's some metallic sounds that people are hearing. There's even some that are being described as chirping. They're all different. So this is why I emphasize, I don't think there's one explanation for everything, but there's probably a series of explanations, and I would use the analogy of UFOs, that there's probably explanations or possible explanations for a large percentage, and there may be a remnant of 3, 4, 5% of all the claimed mysterious sounds that don't fall into some easy categories, but I don't think they have much to do with the aliens. I suspect it has something to do with military operations or natural sounds. I mean, it's not a new phenomenon either. We can go back and listen to things like the Barrisal guns, if we still get those.
Right, the Talus hum, the Kokomo hum.
Exactly. Kokomo hum, mysterious hums have been going on and being recorded for decades. So this is not new. I think what is new is that people have an easier time of recording these things now. In fact, there was a study on, actually not a study, but a survey on Reddit. I don't know how many of your listeners are also on Reddit or Redditors, but somebody spent some time looking through all the identities of the posters who are posting videos and other recordings of the hums and the rumblings and so forth, and they found some consistencies in that a lot of them were conspiracy theorists. So automatically there's some suspicion that somebody's posting things that they think are mysterious themselves without being particularly objective about it. So maybe there's something to the sounds and maybe not, but I simply don't think we have enough evidence to automatically assume that they're all alien or all volcanic rumblings or all government conspiracies, and certainly not all of them are going to be due to HARP. Maybe we haven't switched it on yet this year. Who knows?
Or it's the sound of the approaching end of the world.
We're getting there.
Well, it's 2012. But have you seen this year, other than the strange sounds, any increases in the number of sightings? When you go to your blog, there's a whole bunch of sightings in Canada for the first few weeks of the year.
Yes, as a matter of fact, that is puzzling, the fact that we had so many at the beginning of the year. We normally get a small percentage compared to the bulk of the year in the first month of every year. I mean, January tends to be slow. Most UFO reports come from July. We normally get reports of the order of July, August tend to be the highest number of reports, and January is very, very low. But in 2012, we had a very big bump. I think we're looking at something like 50 or 60 or 70 reports for Canada for January alone. The other areas of the United States have also had very, very significant report numbers. So there seems to be a very big bump. We know that many of the cases, we've actually been able to establish this. You mentioned Chinese lanterns towards the beginning of the show. We know that a lot of the cases in the first few days of January, and again, there's dozens of them, were due to people setting off Chinese lanterns and watching them go as part of a celebration. So we suspect that many of them are those, but at the same time, there are some reports that don't sound at all like Chinese lanterns. So we're not sure what's going on, but we certainly started 2012 off with a real bang in terms of numbers of UFO reports across North America.
I know MUFON's been mentioning it in the last issue of their journal. I'll tell you what, though. We know about the big sightings, you know, in the past, and whether any of these sightings will be as significant remains to be seen. But let's go to, as what Chris O'Brien or our KK or whatever he wants to be called, K-person. Or K-Pax.
Tim Keegan. How's that? K. Keegan Barnes.
Whatever. I can't remember
K
that.
And you can call him KK, but you don't have to call him KKK.
Yeah, please.
Oh,
yeah,
I like
don't,
that.
Don't go the extra mile.
Okay. No.
So KK mentioned, of course, you cut your teeth on Shag Harper. Let's revisit Shag Harper for listeners who haven't had the full story. Let's take a voyage back through time.
Chris, it was Chris Stiles, another Chris, who really did all of the legwork on the Shag Harper, although it was part of the big wave and flap in Canada in 1967, where we saw the Falcon Lake case in 1967 in Canada. Shag Harbor in 1967. There was a case in Charleswood, Manitoba in 1967. It seemed that the 1960s were very good for UFOs in Canada. Shag Harbor is one of the classic cases where a number of people had reported seeing lights moving around on shore just off the coast of Nova Scotia in Canada. And they had seen a brilliant object seem to fall out of the sky onto the water, onto the ocean, not too far away from shore. And it was reported to the RCMP, and the RCMP were notified. They enlisted the assistance of a number of fishermen who went out in boats. And they could see a light on the surface of the water that extinguished shortly after they had started making their way towards it. But when they got to where this light had been, there was a glowing green scum or diffuse material floating on the surface of the water and directly underneath the surface of the water. And they had studied it for some time. They tried to look around for debris, but there was nothing. And eventually the glow dissipated, and that was that. Now, there were attempts to try and find what had crashed into the ocean. Divers had come in. There were stories that the military had been brought in to go to the bottom of the bay and try and find things. And the story officially was that nothing had been discovered. Now, since then, the number of documents had been recovered through Freedom of Information Act here in Canada, which is called Access to Information. And Chris Stiles and Don Ledger and other individuals who worked very hard on this found evidence that there seemed to have been some sort of cover-up, that there was military activity. There are stories of something being brought out from the water, loaded onto a flatbed trailer and taken away, which is exactly what you might imagine might have occurred. And yet the official story is that nothing was recovered. Not that nothing happened. In fact, this is what makes Canada's Roswell different from Roswell, in the sense that we have documentation that something really did happen. The Royal Canadian Mounted Police have their files. The Air Force has its files. And they all affirm that something actually occurred, but that simply nothing had been recovered from underneath the water. And that makes it very different from Roswell, because Roswell, you can't, we simply don't have the government admitting that anything happened whatsoever.
Do you think anything happened at Roswell, just parenthetically?
Yeah, I do think something happened, whether it was an alien ship or a military device that went astray tragically, I'm not sure. As you may have heard, I'm part of Kevin Randall's dream team, as it's been called.
Well, I'll tell you what, just to tell you that the next episode of the PowerCast will feature Kevin Randall, who will tell us about the dream team, and we're also going to have Jim Mosley on that episode, ladies and gentlemen. This is going to be some kind of show. Chris Rutkowski is here now, a member of the Roswell Dream Team. With Gene and KK, you're in
the PowerCast.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you own an Apple iPhone and love to listen to your favorite programs on GCN, I've got good news for you. I'm proud to announce that GCN has a brand new iPhone app available for our dedicated listeners at GCNlive.com. Listen to your favorite hard-hitting GCN programs live or on demand right on your iPhone. And the best part? The GCN iPhone app can be yours absolutely free. Download the iPhone app today by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com. Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.